Hello there. Shh, it's okay.
Don't run. Look at you. You're soaked. It's a good thing you ran into our church.
Oh, Story, you're shivering. Let me wrap you in a big warm embrace. That's a spicy hug.
Hey, I want to hug the congregant too. Hey, Sister Callista, you want to also hug this new congregant who mysteriously wandered into our church on this dark, stormy, oh-so-mysterious night?
No, that's okay. They're a little too, greasy, even for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens. When a story storm passes, it gets extra greasy outside. Another hug for free. It can be hard to sleep with all that grease. That's why what you need is a sweet little lullaby. La la la, story true. May the cowards betray you. We are watching, you can't hide. Grease it, grip it, slurp it down.
Alright, one more. You know, with a new friend here, we can have a real service. We can have petitions, a psalm, and even the story must be told.
The story must be told. Must be told.
Join us, stranger, as we beseech the story on behalf of congregants who gave us their sweet, sweet Patreon cheddar. The response is quiet, so lean in. Story baby.
For Dustin H., that the story might lure you to a barn, club you on the back of the head, and fit you with a saddle. Your H now stands for horsey boy. Shh, shh, oh my story baby. For Ashley E., may you find your face in a museum painted by some old dum-dum 300 years ago. That is your face and your painting. Steal it. I dare ya. Shh, shh. Oh, my story, baby. For Congregant Lee M., glue is now something you secrete. Might your body crunch with debris from every floor, bench, and grocery display you bump against. Crunch, crunch. Uh-huh, lucky duck. Shh, shh, oh my story, baby.
For Elite Rewards Prime Congregant Aaron G., nothing is more important than a piled-high plate of spaghetti. Deny your family for pasta, sauce, and a sweet gabagool. Yeah, yeah. Shh, shh, oh my healthy story, baby. For Heather N., that some dogs will, in their own quiet ways, know every bad thing you've ever done. Woof, woof. Dogs judge you. Will you judge them? Oh, be careful. Bark, bark. Shh, shh. Oh, my little story doll.
For Preston W., might the story make one cabinet in your home sticky? Just one. You don't know why, and nothing cleans it. Might you accidentally touch it every morning? Shh, shh, oh, my story baby. For Carrie Ming S., may you lose the coordination needed for clapping. At public gatherings, may you instead shout the word, clapping, clapping, clapping. Clapping, clapping, clapping. Just use three of those, please. Shh, shh, oh, my pretty, pretty, pretty baby story baby.
Boy, oh boy, mysterious stranger. It's good you wandered in. You can meet our other wandering guest. Yeah, we got a waylaid preacher. He even has a new filmed special with Last Podcast on the Left, live from New Orleans. Available on lastpodcastlive.com for only $6.66. You think you're tough enough to buy it with your own sticky cheddar, with a big old plate of gobble ghoul, or spaghetti piled high with all the fixins? Just try, we dare ya, ha ha.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, please welcome the slippery, the immaculate Marcus Parks.
Thank you, Brother Reed, Pastor Andrew, and Sister Callista. Before I begin, just let me say, I gladly give up my own family for the story. You didn't even ask me, but I made my choice, and I'm proud. From the book of Fresh Tots, written by Boo T. Pajama Twins, a story titled, Good Night, My Love. Guy was washing dishes, listening to a podcast about fly fishing, when Mandela asked him to pause it. Okay. He kept washing dishes. She asked him to stop that too. That's when he knew it was serious. She braced herself on the faux marble counter and took a deep breath.
What do you think of Pips?
Guy didn't mean to laugh. Pips? You mean like Gladys Knight and thee? He made vaguely Motown woo-woos at her. She frowned.
Pips. Plasminellid implant pregnancy sequence.
For the next 20 minutes, Guy absorbed a long talk full of words he didn't understand. Multi-host xeno anesthetiated eruption, proboscis cell sampling, psychomorphological osmosis. Pips, as best he could gather, was invasive. Pips would debilitate not just Mandela, but Guy as well. But Pips, and this was where it got tricky, meant they could have a baby. A baby? Guy repeated. It was a word they hadn't spoken lately.
I have a coworker. He and his wife just went through it. They said we could come by and see what it's like.
Guy still didn't know what Pips was, but seeing the cautious hope on Mandela's face, he didn't need to. Of course. Of course. They embraced. Do you want a lime seltzer? When Mandela went to bed, Guy stayed up on his phone and searched for Pips. The first result was a picture of Gladys Knight. Searching Pips pregnancy did better. He watched an animation posted on Facebook by Parkview Fertility. A friendly asteroid hurtled through the atmosphere. It splashed in the ocean, cracked open like an egg. A cascade of pink cartoon hearts flowed forth, and then a tiny black tadpole. The rest was a soft focus collage of grinning families and shiny, cone-headed babies. Guy was more confused than before. He resorted to YouTube. Normally, he'd watch clips of ornery goats headbutting sedans, cats missing their jumps. This time, though, he found surgery footage. Guy couldn't cover his eyes fast enough. Holes Swiss cheesed through lungs, leaking stomachs, a yellow flicking tongue, and black ink. The description didn't call it Pips. They called it a parasite invasion. The video's narrator screamed,
"This is what happens when you take God out of the uterus!"
The rideshare car dropped Guy and Mandela off at 344 McGinnis. By the third step up the stairs, Guy's armpits were soaked. He clenched his jaw as they paced closer to the door of 3R.
"You all right?"
Mandela asked.
"You look sick."
Guy nodded, but the pallor of his face did not ease Mandela's worry. He knocked. The man who answered was not what Guy expected. He looked like Guy. Thinning, non-confrontational haircut, glasses, a pair of gray slacks from Gap Adults.
"Mandela, long time no see."
He laughed.
"Ah, and this must be the guy I've heard all about."
He extended a hand.
"Crandon, let's toss your coats in the bedroom."
The couple followed Crandon to a modest bedroom. A white bassinet was pulled up to the side of the queen mattress. Guy lingered behind and looked inside. Black ink stains smeared the white fabric like it had incubated a restless squid. He left the bedroom to see a woman hugging his wife. Black stains walked a trail up her sweatshirt, rimming her collar like she tried to drink tar and took too big a gulp.
It's so nice having visitors. So much easier when people come to us.
She released Mandela and Guy held out his hand to the woman. She was under 5 feet tall, but stocky enough she could pin him in a wrestling match.
So this is the guy I've heard so much about.
She hugged him.
I'm Trishy, and yes, we hug here.
A motley of IKEA rugs covered the desecrated ancient wooden floor. 3 bookshelves stood sentry on the walls, books in 2, DVDs on another, with records and tapes on the bottom. Guy felt at ease. He could be in his own home. Until he saw the stains of black ink. Dots on record sleeves, trails like sneaker scuffs over the hardwood. Every glass frame was speckled.
As I was saying, they're napping right now, but they sleep so soundly, so don't worry about volume.
They? Guy asked.
Acorn, the baby. We figure they is better than it.
Guy said nothing. It. So it really wasn't human.
How about drinks?
Crandon asked. After a couple glasses of wine, they ate dinner in the living room. They didn't talk about the baby, doing standard get-to-know-you questions instead. Crandon was a big goof, and Trishy reminded Guy of his Aunt Pauline, the way she told stories with her whole body, adding sound effects like a kid reenacting a movie. With the warm confidence of his buzz, Guy was distracted into having a good time. Then it started crying. The sound was not like a baby. It was airy, like a dying balloon trying to reclaim what it lost.
Sounds like somebody's hungry.
Trishy laughed and followed the sound. Guy's heart pounded as she left the room. Crandon asked Mandela something, and they laughed together, but Guy heard none of it. He would see a parasite, a leech, the family invader.
Who do you want, mommy or daddy?
He heard Trishy say as she approached. Guy would not turn to face it. He could not. Cold sweat dappled his forehead. Next to him, Trishy's chair creaked.
Ready for dinner?
Mandela said, voice delicate and sweet. He could not help but look up. The child was the shape and size of an infant, but not near so solid. It was dressed in a powder blue-trimmed onesie with a sailor's kerchief. Wherever it met skin, it smudged black with the child's mystery drippings. Fresh from the source, the greasy substance was thicker than Guy imagined, like running clay. It reeked of fennel. The child bubbled and sucked airily, then coughed. A fine spray of inky particles misted forth, but from where? Guy stopped breathing. He could find no face on the glossy black turnip-shaped head until something quivered at the narrow peak of the skull. The mouth was on top of the head. It was an aperture at the end of a thin stem. No wonder it whistled like a balloon. Guy dropped his gaze to his piled high plate of spaghetti. Mandela asked polite questions, but he heard none of them. Images from surgical videos flashed in his mind. The blood, the ink, the eyes barred for anonymity.
Well, I thought they wanted mommy, but I think they want daddy.
Come here, tadpole.
Crandon laughed. He received his child and cradled it in his arms. Then he lifted his shirt. At first, all Guy could see was the scar, a giant wine red blot below his kidney, the diameter of a fist. Then he saw another scar, smaller, like a purple asterisk to the main attraction. Guy took a hasty sip of wine. He could sense Crandon watching him, waiting for him to take it all in. Guy could not look yet, just listen. The tiny mouth did not chug or suck, but popped and clicked at Crandon's chest. Slowly, Guy's focus shifted upwards. Below Crandon's solar plexus, a 2-inch tube snaked from the father's chest into Acorn's puckered mouth. Through the cloudy plastic, Guy could see a yellow proboscis flitting in and out, turning red.
"See,"
Crandon said,
"everyone gets a little dinner."
Whatever Guy's discomfort, Mandela did not share in it. As the pounding in his ears faded, he could hear one of her questions.
"Do you get a lot of stares being a breastfeeding dad?"
"Well, it's not."
"I mean, not breastfeeding,
no,
but, you know."
"No, it's fine. It was very new to me, too. But you'd be amazed how quickly this felt natural."
Guy studied Crandon's face. The father had the look of the Virgin Mary, an image of grace and half-lidded calm Guy had absorbed from parochial school.
"People will think whatever they want,"
Crandon continued.
"For us, I think it's actually one of the bigger appeals."
"Crandon was afraid of turning into his dad,"
Trishy explained.
"Pretty much,"
he said.
"He wasn't a part of my life. Tried to get to know me before he died, but too little, too late, you know? I swore I would never be a father, but the more we learned about Pips and saw how, you know, I'd be a part of the process, I stopped worrying. I think we'd have a lot more present fathers if traditional reproduction was like this."
"Who took the first eruption?"
Trishy raised a hand, then placed it over her side as she recalled.
"But Guy did his part, eventually."
"I was nervous,"
he laughed.
"But once they're inside you, it's...
Crandon began to cry. And Trishy laughed at him.
"There he goes again."
The writhing parasite wiggled deeper against the man's chest, little stunted hands grabbing at Crandon's shirt for support. Where the glistening palms touched, black residue stained. Guy lost track of their words, ears agonizingly focused on the jabbing proboscis, the wincing tremors of the father.
"He gets weepier over it than I did, and I think that's so cute."
Trishy laughed.
"Do you want to hold Acorn, Guy?"
His chair screeched across the linoleum as he jumped up from his seat. The sound was so abrupt the child unlatched from the port and began squealing in its high whistle.
"Where's your bathroom?"
Guy had the water running when the knock came.
Just a little more,"
he said, fighting his panicked breaths. The knock came again.
"I said just a little."
The door opened and Mandela stepped inside. "Oh.
What is going on?"
she asked. He was sitting on the toilet, head between his knees. She saw his red-rimmed eyes, pupils wide, sweat on his forehead.
"Are you on drugs?"
"No,"
he said, indignant.
"I'm just..."
He didn't need to finish speaking. Mandela sank to her knees next to him and reassured him with her touch.
"Is it Acorn?"
Guy just sniffed, focused on catching his breath. He steadied himself and confessed. "I watched videos before we came."
"Videos?"
He fished in his pocket for his phone and handed it to Mandela. She entered his passcode, then opened the app. Her face changed from concern to anger to nausea.
"Oh, honey, why did you do this to yourself? You said you were fine with it."
"I don't remember what I said. I said what, you know, you wanted."
"Then you went online."
He nodded his head.
"Guy, this is..."
She paused, searching the back of her skull for the right words.
"This is not how you should learn about this. What if we were having a child traditionally? You'd see videos of episiotomies and C-sections and shit and blood and... Yeah, it's all part of it. But it's not the whole picture."
Guy's breathing slowed, punctuated though it was by sharp inhales.
"I didn't think about it like that."
"Jesus, just look at the title. Usurpers of Children, Behind the Veil, Part 7, Eruption. Guy, this is religious nutjob stuff. If you think this is a balanced point of view..."
"I didn't think it was... I just wanted to see it. Actually see."
"Well, you did. Yeah, it's not always gentle. But that's part of it. The Plasmanella doesn't have a body plan. It has to try pieces of us. That's how it becomes our child.
It's a parasite.
Only for the first 3 years. And it's not parasitism if you give it willingly. It's love.
Mandela turned the phone over and set it on the sink.
What you saw is not Pips. Outside this door, that's Pips. Having any kind of baby fucks up your body, but it's not about that. It's about the baby.
She reflected.
Not that I really know either. That's why we're here.
To find out.
Yeah.
Guy sat there, face still red but cooling down. Mandela rubbed his leg, and he fought to put words together. I wish we could do it the normal way. Mandela's shoulders fell, her heart growing heavy.
But we can't.
I know. I wish it wasn't my fault. Her arms were around him before he finished. The warmth of her wrapped him, cheeks pressed together and eyes closed. A true love embrace atop the toilet.
This is no one's fault.
Crandon and Trishy shared a brief look of concern when the couple emerged from the bathroom. Guy was still red in the face. They'd all know he was crying. Trishy didn't give him a chance to feel awkward. She had refilled their wine and handed each their glass.
There you two are. Mandy, you should come with me. I want to show you Acorn's outfits.
Oh my God, yes!
Mandela laughed.
The little booties, the booties!
Trishy said, leading Mandela away by the elbow. Crandon bounced the black, glistening parasite gently on his knee, his shirt back down to hide the feeding port and the eruption scars. Guy still wouldn't look directly at the child, just listened to the strange gurglings from the mouth at the top of its head.
Aw, little bud, you got gunk in your eyes.
Crandon said in mock surprise, pulling a black smeared towel from his shoulder. Guy had not noticed the child had eyes. Sure enough, he saw light reflecting from behind the pursed mouth. Sensing Guy's interest, Crandon shifted to give a better view. From one perspective, the child was faceless, like a melting candle pooling down from the top. But with a slight adjustment to his view, Guy could see the face. The eyes were all pupil, empty black, set close together over the mouth, like how holes are arranged on a bowling ball. The eyelids hid most of the eye, the child comfortable and blissed out in the hands of the father. There was none of the distance Guy could sometimes sense between a father and a newborn. It was jealousy that made him turn away. When he turned back, the child's face was inches away from his own.
I caught you looking. Take them.
Crandon was laughing, dangling the slick infant in front of Guy's face.
I couldn't really,
he said, hands held up, when the child grabbed a finger. Guy's refusal went quiet. The little hand was tied about his thumb, but it was not wet or sticky. The child was warm, the pressure strong for such a little thing.
There you go,
Crandon said, dropping the child into Guy's clumsy arms. Acorn began to squirm in violent twists, and only now did Guy sense how long the torso was. The legs sprouted so far from the arms, the child could not properly touch the two together. Guy fought to keep hold, positioning one hand under an arm and another on the bottom. There was a growth projecting from Acorn's rear, a tail receding into the body. The squirming grew more intense, a little head lolling on a long neck.
Come here, no. You have to support it,
Crandon said, guiding Guy's palm under the misshapen skull. Squirming stopped.
See?
The body contracted, the legs and arms returning to a normal distance. The child grabbed at the feet, rocking in Guy's lap as the stubborn toes slipped loose. He looked down and saw the child staring directly into his eyes. They were curious.
Hi.
Guy told the child. Acorn blinked at him. He realized their eyes weren't black, but dark green, little shimmers of gold. The eyes crinkled, and the bright proboscis flicked out of Acorn's mouth. Guy's eyes went wide. His breath stalled, and a queasy look appeared on his face. At this odd expression, round little hills rose below the child's eyes and reddened, turning the eyes into crescents. The mouth twisted into a shape like a wedge of orange, and a new sound escaped the child's lips. Crandon's face went white. Jaw dropped to display his bottom teeth in a slack row.
Trishy!
He called in a stage whisper.
Hurry! Trishy!
Acorn chirped, a sound which now began to concern Guy. Were they joking? Why didn't the parents do something? Trishy sprinted into the room and stopped dead in the door jamb. She covered her mouth to control the frantic breath, stunned at the sight. The child squealed again, and this time the parents joined the laughter. Guy looked at them all stunned.
They're laughing,
Crandon said. Both parents came to Guy's side. You can take them back, Guy offered.
No, no, please,
Trishy said, eyes watering.
They've never done that before.
The little proboscis poked out again, and the child broke into their alien laughter at Guy's reliable expression.
Looks like somebody's got a fan,
Crandon said, shaking Guy's shoulder. Guy looked down at the crescent eyes, the red cheeks, and the sound no longer felt alien. The high-pitched, chirping laughter rang through him, resounding inside the chambers of his heart. He saw Mandela enter the room. The worry was gone in her eyes.
I'll leave you alone for a minute.
Later, when Trishy declared it was Acorn's bedtime, Guy was quietly relieved. His back was sore. He'd been sitting there on the hardwood for an hour. He still had not become comfortable, flinching when the newborn moved too fast, but by the end it was not so alien. Still, he wondered. How could he endure years of this?
We have a bedtime routine,
Crandon told Mandela and Guy.
A little story, some mommy tummy time, then a little thing at the end. You should join for the last part. It's really sweet.
Of course,
Mandela said. The two parents left.
While they're gone,
Mandela said, jumping to her feet. She ran for the bathroom, cheeks wine-flushed. Guy sat alone. Though Acorn was gone, the room still smelled of fennel. Without meaning, he kept his hands over his mouth, rubbing under his nose. He gave them a sniff. He reeked of the substance. The smell didn't bother Guy, though. After a few days, he might not even notice it. Guy could imagine what a YouTube video might yell at him.
Parasite pheromones! It invades the mind, dulls the senses, nasal Stockholm syndrome.
Shut up, he whispered to no one. Human babies did the same thing. If you define love by biology, the boundaries all blur into deceit. The size of the eyes, the pitch of the squeals, all triggers to evoke a parent's protection. Seeing Trishy and Crandon with Acorn, Guy didn't think of biology or species or invasion. He saw a family. Guy heard the sink running in the bathroom when the bedroom door creaked open. Crandon leaned out and whispered down the hall.
Come on, we're just about finished.
Guy and Mandela followed Crandon into the bedroom. The lights were all off, except for headlights shining through curtained windows. Their eyes could not discern shapes at first, until adjusting to the dark, they saw the outlines of a mother and a child lying on the bed. The black stains of the child's touch were invisible in the dim light. Trishy folded a square book closed and set it gently on the windowsill.
Okay, Tadpole, you ready?
Crandon whispered, crouching down as he joined the mother and child.
Alexa, play Goodnight, My Love.
As the words left Crandon's mouth, the child directed their gaze to the table in expectation. Moments later, a speaker flickered in blue watery light. Playing Goodnight, My Love by Gladys Knight and the Pips, the device toned. A song began to play. The parents stood, hugged the child between them, and began to sway. To the slow bop of the song, they danced, all silhouettes. Mandela pressed close to Guy. The parents began to sing to their child.
Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams. Sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright and bring you closer to me now.
Mandela moved against Guy, and they too rocked in place. The parents sang along to the verse, slow dancing as a family. The child's eyes turned to slivers, then closed entirely. Body loose in comfort and love. Headlights passed, lapping waves of light washing over the three in their rhythmic embrace. As the chorus came again, Mandela joined, and then Guy.
Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams. Sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright, and bring you closer to me now.
Mandela and Guy laced their fingers together. The parents bent their heads over the child, now lying comfortable in their bassinet, and kissed them goodnight. Mandela squeezed Guy's hand. For a moment, his mind was in another place. He felt as though he was recalling this scene from the future as it happened in the present. Their bodies leaning against one another felt incomplete somehow. He missed someone that did not exist yet. Back in the living room, the lights seemed overbright. The parents returned, and the evening continued, but in Guy's mind, it had already ended. Each conversation, laugh, and story seemed an unnecessary nightcap on the peak of the night. They finished their drinks and announced they should call a car back to Queens.
It was a pleasure having you both over,
Trishy said, hugging them goodbye.
Seriously, we're stuck here, so come again.
Sure, Guy said. We'd be happy to. Just let Mandela know. Crandon hugged Guy as well. They shared no words at first, until Crandon pointed out a black stain on Guy's collar.
Oh, shoot. We got a Tide pen if you need it.
Guy felt an instant of repulsion, but let it subside. No, it's okay. I'll be fine. The door to 3R shut, and the couple walked the three flights down in silence. Outside, Mandela checked her phone.
1 minute till it's here.
Guy watched the cars with their blinding headlights zipping by. These harsh, racing lights were what had illuminated the dancers. It had a different quality inside the bedroom, as though by entering the family's home it had softened, become gentle. Guy took Mandela's hand. He squeezed as a car on the road lit up red brake lights to pull over to the curb. Mandela smiled at her husband and began to walk over to their ride. But Guy did not budge. She looked back questioningly. Okay, Guy said. Mandela turned her head to the car, but this was not what Guy was talking about. Okay, he said, strange nervousness flickering in it this time. She laughed. They hugged, having come to such an agreement with so few words. The driver honked as their bodies pressed together. Hugging, they spun slowly together in the dark, lit by passing cars. Two dancing, as they decided to be three. The story must be told.
Thank you kindly, Marcus. And thank you for listening, kind stranger, gentle stranger, warm, oddly hairless stranger.
You know, and thanks to Chaplain Jackie Zabrowski as well for lending her voice to such a heartwarming story. You know, it made me almost miss my own family. Almost. Just kidding. No. I gave up my family a long time ago. Isn't that right, Sister Callista?
That's right, Pastor Andrew.
Sure. I know the story we just heard made it sound like we support families. Let's be clear. We do not. If you want to stay with us, new friend, sweet, trusting friend, it's simple. All you gotta do is deny your family.
You'll find the strength, stranger. Or you can just go back outside.
The hardest part of leaving your family is finding the right words. That's why the church provides the following template. Dear dum-dums, yeah, I used to love you, but now I don't. The story is all I need. The story fills me in a way love can't. Up to the story frickin' brim, ay. If you ever find me, I'll pretend not to know you. If you call my name, I'll bark like a dog. Woof, woof. Patooey, patooey. I spit on you, loved ones. Love, me.
Beautiful. Thank you, Sister Callista. All right, well, think about your decision, stranger, because we don't open that door for another 2 weeks. Out of the frying pan and into the grease. Yeah, we don't know how to use a deep fryer. Oh, no.
That was another thrilling installment of The Story Must Be Told, and I'm having another puberty. Become a patron. Help ensure this podcast exists for future generations to suckle and sup. Patreon.com/TSMBT. Ow! I'm teething, but with my spine. We release a Patreon-exclusive podcast called The 522 Club on the weeks between stories. Gain access for just $5.22 a month. Hormones flood my voice, making me sound gradually more like Ray Romano. Check out our merch at topedoco.com/collection/TSMBT or find the link on our socials at TSMBTpod. Yeah, second puberty sheds your baby spine and blossoms you with tertiary sex characteristics. But mostly, you sound like Big R. Romano. Consider a mug, a pin, or a shirt. People like the one with the boy on it. Deborah, I've surprisingly become a reputable actor in recent years. We'll be back in 2 weeks when my transformation is complete. Behold, I am Romano, destroyer of worlds, Deborah!
Just use one of those, please.
The story must be told!
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.